Hello, my name is Jerry Barmash, and this is Hear Now the News, a weekly podcast featuring interviews that explore the pressing issues in our lives. While I'm based in New York, and that will be a focus of the stories, you can be sure I will also address those of a national importance. In fact, one of the main reasons I'm here with this podcast is because I just couldn't sit idly by as the most dramatic news cycle of our lifetimes unfolds. A little about me. I'm a veteran broadcaster with on-air experience in voiceovers, traffic reporting, sports anchoring, and business news. But for the last several years, I've been totally immersed in news, whether as an anchor, street reporter, or a digital reporter. It was in that role during the pandemic for a major New York City radio station, I created content with high-profile Zoom interviews. Before mid-March, I only knew Zoom as a PBS children's show when I was growing up. Now I'm ready to take that formula to podcasting platforms. Each Monday, a new episode will get posted with another interview that I hope you'll find insightful and informative, as we have an opportunity here to delve deeper. At times, I may look back instead of going forward with important anniversaries, and when possible, I'm always willing to share some lighter moments. I'm pleased to start this journey with Anthony Scaramucci, the former Trump communications director who, as you know, has severed all ties to the president and now makes the case for Joe Biden as commander-in-chief. One note about the title. It's an homage to legendary New York TV anchor Roger Grimsby, who led Eyewitness News for 16 years, starting in 1970 with the famous line, alongside Bill Buitel. Thank you for being here. Coming up, my interview with Anthony Scaramucci.
Good to be here, Jerry. Thank you. Congratulations on the podcast. Wishing you great success.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, first guest, and I had to find somebody with a little bit of a name and a little bit of, some oomph right now. And you certainly carry that. I think that's a technical term.
Well, I'm assuming that you mean my name, it having four syllables in it, is a little bit of a name.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. A lot to talk about as we get to these final couple of weeks before the election. Joe Biden is leading in most polls that we see and most demographics nationwide and a lot of states. In fact, now even into Georgia. As someone now, you are pushing very hard for early voting to take down President Trump. Do you think that there will be any sense of complacency as we get to Election Day?
I personally do not. I think that the fervor and the passion is actually on the side of the vice president, and it may be negative passion, frankly. It may be votes against President Trump. I think the great irony here, and we saw this in the 2016 campaign, the polarizing figure in the 2016 campaign was Secretary Clinton. Now, I happen to like her personally, but for whatever reason, she was polarizing. She was quite famous. People had already made up their minds about her years ago. And there were many people voting against her and not necessarily for President Trump back in 2016. And I actually think the irony here is the opposite is happening, Jerry. People are lining up, masks in hand, voting against Donald Trump.
Yeah, that seems to be what I'm hearing a lot. In fact, when I was out in the field talking to people 4 years ago, it was not that they were so admiring and in love with Trump. It was that they couldn't stand Hillary Clinton. And that's what you found. And I think not that people, I think there is a lot of that this time around as well. Maybe frustration with the president.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, I want to be offering as balanced of a perspective as possible. I don't want to be the person demonizing the president. He's attacked me. He's attacked my family members. He's a vicious guy. He has a tendency to go very low. But I want to address it from a qualitative and quantitative objective assessment. He just hasn't handled things well. If you step back, he's failing on the economy, primarily because he totally mishandled the pandemic. Our ratio of deaths is ridiculous compared to the Europe or compared to the Asian nations. Now, let me just give you a quick example. Per capita deaths are 20% of our deaths in Germany. Per capita deaths in South Korea, you're getting 20 deaths per million in South Korea. They got the virus the same day we did. We're getting over 600 deaths per day. We have a case count rising in the United States, 60 plus thousand per day, 700 plus people dying a day. And the president is walking around without a mask. He's in the helicopter, Marine One, without a mask. He's telling his people that he's immune from the virus. We know scientifically that's likely not to be true. And so people vote on emotion, Jerry, but they do vote on an assessment of, are they better off? Is the country better off? Some people feel better off, but by and large, the country as a whole feels way less off. And I would submit to you and your listeners that he's made the country weaker. He's weakened our alliances. He's made the country poorer. He's mishandled the economy. And the wealth gap is now wider than it's ever been. He inherited a 4.7% unemployment number. It's in the high single digits now, 8-ish percent. We would call that, using the president's words, a disaster. And he's made us sicker because, frankly, he wouldn't listen to people like Anthony Fauci or other people in the scientific community in terms of how to handle and approach the epidemiology. And if he was just like Germany, he doesn't have to be like South Korea. They got MERS and SARS. We didn't understand it as well. But he could have been more technocratic about it like the Germans, and we would be well on our way to a very robust economic recovery. And it's for these reasons I think he's getting voted out of office.
Do you think that it's the coronavirus primarily that we're going to see a potential landslide, actually? Is that his Achilles heel?
Well, his Achilles heel is actually his lack of managerial expertise. His Achilles heel is he has no executive function in his personality. And so 50 years from now, 10 years from now, whenever it'll be, the Harvard Business School will do a case study on the president's crisis management at the time of COVID-19. And I'll tell you guys a story that I rarely tell. And it goes back to October of 2019, a senior level cabinet official, a well-recognized person sitting on my couch in my office says to me, again, October 2019, we're going to be really in for it. What do you mean, sir? Well, the president doesn't have to manage anything. And so if you study the Pentagon, you have six reports. If you study GE or IBM or Microsoft, you have six reports. The Harvard Business School says you really can't have more than six reports because then it becomes unwieldy and cumbersome. And then those six reports have six and so on. But the president has no reports. So every morning it is a billiard game. There's a cue ball. He smashes that cue ball into the other people that are in the room. The balls are flying everywhere and everybody's paralyzed. There's no symphony or orchestration from the presidency. If you read Richard Neustadt's book when we were in college, who studied the presidency, Richard, the professor from Harvard, said, well, there's a White House model where everything's coordinated at the White House, or there's a cabinet model where the cabinet coordinates back into the White House. Well, in the president's case, there's no model. And there's impetuosity and there's freewheelingness. And he's made the presidency a one-man Broadway show. No co-stars, no one else can get any credit. And so now everybody's paralyzed with fear and they're uncoordinated. Moreover, they don't want to be humiliated on the president's Twitter feed. So they don't want to say anything, God forbid, wrong that the president will go after them for. So they sit there and they wait. Okay, so you're saying that no coordination, a crisis comes, we're going to be in for it. Yes. Well, Jerry, I thought that crisis was going to be the Soleimani strike. When General Soleimani was killed, I said, oh my God, this is the crisis that this gentleman was talking about. And it turned out that cooler heads prevailed, and thankfully we didn't have a third war in the Middle East. But the real crisis turned out to be COVID-19, and the president's impact with that has been a disaster. So it could have been COVID-19. It could have been anything that comes up in the normal course of operation of running the government of the United States and also being impacted by the world. And so he just doesn't have the skill set. He's not fit temperamentally to be president, and he's not fit from an executive function to be president. So yes, COVID-19 is his Achilles heel, but it could have been anything that bubbled up to that level.
What about with his loyal base? It doesn't seem that any support has eroded. In fact, it seems that whatever we're talking about, there's an alternate universe, an alternate reality with them.
Well, but there is an alternate reality. And so what's happening is they're getting their news beamed in from Fox News, or they're getting it beamed in from OAN News or this thing called Newsmax. And they're all slanted very, very much so to the right. And they're all slanted and colorizing on behalf of the president. And so if you go back to the Fox in March, April, and May, I think people could be critical of them in terms of the way they were dealing with and approaching the seriousness of the virus. And they were alongside of him diminishing what the virus really meant and what the deadliness of the virus was, despite what people like Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci were saying to the president. Moreover, you have a very large group of people in the United States that believes that we are in a culture war. The president and William Barr are the two last white men standing to protect their culture from the latte drinking Black and Hispanic transvestites that are going to come up over the transom, take over the government, and take over the culture. And so they'll stand there in the freezing cold, they'll stand there in the pouring rain, and they'll vote for the president, whether he shoots people on Fifth Avenue or not, because they really do believe that. And that is a false narrative. That's a ginned up thing from the media. We're not having any impact on the people and the way they live in Montana or South or North Dakota. We have no impact on them. They have no impact on us. There's a great individual spirit in America. There's a great liberalism in America. And I don't mean that as liberal as a party. I mean it in the Western canon of traditional freedom of liberalism in our country. And so I think we need leadership now in the country that explains that to people. Calm down. The first name of the country is United. There's no reason for us to go after each other the way we're going after each other. And people don't like it. You know, at the end of the day, people vote about these things in terms of the way they feel. And they feel under stress. The president makes them stressful. It is almost like you've got a uncle that's unwell. He happens to be living in the house with you. He's disrupting dinner. He's disrupting breakfast. And you're stressed out about it. And here comes the president. He's beaming into our houses every single day. He's decided that he needs to be the news cycle. As we both know, he's a super attention getter. When he does a news search, he only searches TRUMP. He doesn't search USA. He certainly doesn't search YOU. He could care less about YOU. And so he's focused on making himself part of the news every single day. And it's one antic after the next. And it's become very tiresome and very bothersome to a very large group of people. So I believe he will be rejected from the polls. And the great irony here, this is not the Clinton-Trump race where there was a Hillary Clinton. If anything, the Hillary Clinton of this race is Donald Trump.
President Trump has threatened, I have to ask you about this, that if he loses, he will not necessarily accept the results and there may not be a peaceful transfer of power. Is he using this as a scare tactic with voters?
Well, I think he's doing two things. First of all, that sounds like it was copywritten for him by the Russian GRU, or it was literally a Russian bot writing lots of things that are going on the presidential Twitter feed, including the ignition of conspiracy theories that are totally false. I mean, he's got guys like Rob O'Neill, SEAL Team 6 trained, killed Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan. I've got to go on places like Chris Cuomo's show to say, hey, stop talking about this being a conspiracy. You're stepping on the graves of heroes that have protected the United States, you know. And this is a guy that actually supports President Trump. So there's even great irony there. So this is designed by President Trump to say that he's not going to accept a peaceful transfer of power, to gin up anxiety among liberals, to quote unquote trigger them. Apparently they like this word triggering, although they seem to be way more triggered on their side than the liberals. And then the secondary thing is they think this is great for their base. This is like, hey, we're in the fight together. We want you there for us. We want you to show up in mass. His strategy right now is to dig deeper into his base. His strategy right now is to expand the voter registration of white uneducated people to come out and vote for him. He has had some success doing that, but that has been overwhelmed by the loss of seniors. It's been overwhelmed by the loss of women, frankly, white suburban women specifically. He got 52% of those last time. He's at 36% right now. It'll be very tough in the next couple of weeks to close that gap. Anything's possible. I'm not one ever to rule out Mr. Trump. Again, I was with him in 2016 after the Access Hollywood tape when he was successful at closing that gap. But I think this is different now. He has a proven record of leadership. He's got 3.5 to 4 years in leadership. And I think he's done a woeful job. And I think most people know that. And I'm willing to predict that there's a good 55% of the American people who are going to vote that are going to agree with me on this.
Another question about the president, if he were to lose, do you worry that he is fueling hate and that if we get to the point where he loses and leaves office, or even if he doesn't, in that in-between point before the inauguration, that there will be rioting and violence in the streets?
So I'm of the opposite view of this. I don't think so. I think he will leave sheepishly. I think he gave a very big tell about 2 weeks ago. He said, if I lose to this guy, you'll never see or hear from me again. And I predict that will be more likely of a scenario. Moreover, he's roundly disliked by the American military. It's not just the retired and active generals. Go look through the enlisted men and women in terms of the way they're voting. Most of them are registered Republicans. They're voting against Mr. Trump. They don't like his leadership style. They certainly don't like him calling them suckers and losers for serving and making sacrifices for their country. So there's a combination of different things that are going on at the same time, which I predict will cause him to slink away. Violence and so on and so forth. I think once he's baked, I think the personality cult of him will dematerialize. It's not to say that we're not going to have systemic issues. There's a lot of white, middle, and lower income anger in the country. There are blue collar people in this country. Again, I grew up in a blue collar family out here on Long Island, but it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We were aspirational working class family. Those same families have become desperational, Jerry. And so there's anger in the system. And as I've said to people in the Biden campaign, the vice president himself, for that matter, we have to cure that. We have to offer policy solutions that will help those people, because if you do that, it will abate their anger and they will start to feel like they're part of the system again. Right now, many of those people feel disenfranchised by the system, and the president has been a lightning rod for that. He's been an avatar of their anger. And I think after he loses, though, and that power diminishes, it'll be a little bit like the way the Night King went down in the Game of Thrones. Well, once he went down, everybody dematerialized and it was a totally different picture. And so this is by far, in my mind, a demagogic personality cult more than anything else. He's hijacked the Republican Party. I think that'll be the interesting outcome. If he loses, there will be a reckoning in the Republican Party, and hopefully there'll be a house cleaning and some type of restructuring and some type of renewal for the Republicans.
More from my interview with Anthony Scaramucci coming up, including being targeted by Trump supporters and why Republicans are willing to enable the president right to the end.
Are you surprised that most of the party is staying with him right to the end?
Well, they are. I was surprised about that in the early part of the year. I thought they had this excellent opportunity to remove him, frankly. He had broken the law, and if they had stood on their patriotism rather than clinging to their personal power and partisanship, they would have removed him. They would have had a better fighting chance with Vice President Pence at the helm in terms of handling COVID-19 and also potentially the election prospects in 2020. And so I said in August of 2019, there's something wrong with the president. That was his highest approval rating, highest poll numbers. I said, this is like Trump Noble. If you remember the HBO series about Chernobyl, the reactor was melting down, and then the apparatchiks had to figure out if they were going to cover it up or clean it up. I got that wrong. I thought the Republicans were going to clean it up. I thought they were going to get rid of him because of his false promises, his lying, his mental instability, all the havoc he's wreaking on them. And I got that wrong. And so I'm no longer surprised by that. They're sort of stuck in that Gordian knot with him. They can't get out of it now. But I do know firsthand from many of them that I've spoken to that they're exhausted by him. They think that he has hurt the party. He has closed down the tent of expansion of that party. And that party is destined, if Mr. Trump wins, it's destined to be a minority party for at least a generation. It'll be down to elderly white people that are buying catheters and CPAP machines and MyPillows from Fox News advertising. I don't think that's the direction we should be going in as a party. I think we need to expand the tent of the party. I think we need to open it up so that it looks like the beautiful, colorful mosaic of the American people. I think we need to consider how we get other income stratas into that party. And listen, there are great parts of that party that I would like to maintain. But one of the things that party is going to need to do is accept this great wealth divide and see if we can come up with policies that will create a platform of equal opportunity for people. That is so necessary. That's not necessarily a left or right idea, but it is really a right or wrong idea for America. And I think that's the right thing for us to do. And hopefully we'll go in that direction.
I saw, speaking of hate, I want to mention you had on Twitter that you were getting attacked and targeted as well. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, well, I'm targeted regularly. I don't want to over-dramatize it. And it obviously gets my wife upset and some of my adult children. But I'm getting, you know, three or four hate letters a week. It's not every single day. The one I posted on Twitter was actually more benign, but it's just ridiculous assertions about me and threats. And, you know, I've had expletives thrown at me on Twitter. Somehow people invade my email space. They figure out what my email is and they'll light me up on email. But that's Trump's America. Trump has given a license to hate. I'm exercising my First Amendment right, and I'm expressing my opinion of what's going on in our country because I love our country, and I love the life that I've been able to live in this country, and I want to see to it that other people can have that opportunity as well. But man, I gotta tell you something. It is very distressing to me that in Trump's America, we can't have any level of civil discourse. It's very binary. It's a demagogic cult, And if you're not with them, they gin up a lot of hate towards you. And I find that distressing. And, you know, that's usually how bad things start in a society.
I mean,
that's a little interwar Germany, too much interwar Germany for a guy like me, Jerry.
I was just going to say, not on a personal level, but I've seen it at rallies where they would gather and, you know, there's no communication. It's really, it's them with Trump and that's it. And you can't cross that line.
Yeah. Listen, you know, look, I went to many of those rallies in 2016. They've become weirder now. In 2016, it was like, okay, these are blue collar people that have felt a vacuum of advocacy from their political leadership for several decades. Today, it's more about the culture. There's an angst out there, and they've got all of this like QAnon nonsense. It's another, obviously, propaganda operation that's got people really believing ridiculous nonsense about what's going on in the country.
I have to ask you about a report. I know you even tweeted about this, New York Post, involving the Hunter Biden story. Does this... First of all, what do you make of the report? And will it have any impact on the election now, 2 weeks out?
Well, you know, listen, I mean, what seems to be unfair about the report, it seems like it was inspired, GRU inspired. And so you'd have to say to yourself, okay, are the Russians now getting back in there? Maybe these emails are true. Maybe they're not true. I think it reflects poorly on Hunter Biden. I don't necessarily think you can ascribe all the blame to the vice president. I mean, it probably disqualifies Hunter Biden from federal office. I don't think it does that for the vice president. It's a mixed bag in our society right now. There's a lot of hypocrisy. Jared and Ivanka Trump made $36 million this past year. They made $82 million the year prior. They're working inside the White House. It seems like that's a direct violation of the Emoluments Clause. They seem to be using the powers of the office to seek their own personal pecuniary benefit. That doesn't justify anything that Hunter Biden is doing. In fact, if anything, it's sort of like a canceling equation where there's so much hypocrisy that you just have to go with who you think would be best for the country at this moment in time. So I don't think it will. They're claiming they have way more salacious allegations that are going to be dropped over the next 2 weeks. We'll have to see, but it seems pretty grounded right now. There are way less undecided voters this time than there were last time. People are rushing to the polls. You have a huge voter turnout in different places, particularly Georgia. You have African Americans because of voter suppression. They're trying to suppress them from voting. They're going to wait online 10, 12 hours, and they're going to wait online all day until they can get into the voting booth and express what their opinion is as to who should be the next leader of the free world. And so for those reasons, I'm pretty confident that the vice president will win. Anything can happen in America. But I think if he does win, the world and most Americans will breathe a sigh of relief and say, OK, We've got this malignancy going on in the country. It's stressing us all out. President's obviously not well. You just look at his antics. You don't have to be a psychiatrist. Imagine you and I watching a football game. If Lawrence Taylor is coming into the pocket and he's crushing Joe Theismann and his leg goes in a way that it's not natural to go in, we know his leg's broken. We don't need to be orthopedic surgeons to know that his leg has been broken. We know the president's unwell. He manifests himself in a way that's quite bizarre. He's prone to conspiracy theories. He's prone to overcompensation based on his insecurities. He's prone to bullying people, which is classically un-American. And he's mismanaged the crisis. And thus, as a result of that, he's blown up the economy. So, you know, to me, it's more astonishing that he has this level of support as opposed to anything else. An earlier America, an America of 1980, as an example, he would be losing this thing 60-40.
There's one more debate that's scheduled, at least, coming up later this week. Is there any way for the president to turn it around with that debate?
Well, it's not clear to me that he'll show up at the debate. Obviously, he didn't show up. He's not showing up at the second debate. He's going to have a competitive town hall. Think about the president. He's a ratings maven. He's passing up the opportunity to speak in front of 60 or 70 million people. A network town hall probably gets anywhere from 5 to 10 million people. So why is he doing that? He's doing that because he realized in the first debate, he did not want to stand on stage with the vice president for 90 minutes while there was going to be a Liz pendants of all of the things that he had destroyed in America in the 3.5 years. So he started out strong, actually. You know, I want to be objective about the president. I'm not one to demonize him. When I watched the early part of the debate, I say he's coming out strong. He's making a case for the Supreme Court appointment. He's coming out strong. And then all of a sudden it dawned on him, okay, wait a minute. The vice president's well prepared. He's not senile. He's going to be coming at me with, I failed on the economy. I failed on COVID-19. I've disrupted the Western alliance. I'm actually an abysmal failure as president. And he's going to be breaking through the reality distortion field. You know, it's one thing to seek interviews on Fox and to live in that bubble, but it's another thing on national television in front of 60 million people to have the reality distortion field broken. He didn't want that. He knows some of his supporters are watching that. And so he began that long process of obnoxious interruption, which he thought was a better strategy than actually having to stand there and try to defend things that have gone completely awry in his presidency. So when that debate ended, I said, no chance he's showing up at the next debate. Then he got COVID-19, of course. You got some air cover there that helped him. It big-footed his tax situation, the COVID-19 diagnosis. But I don't think he's going to the next debate. I don't think he gets there because I don't see how he could stand there with a very well-prepared Vice President Biden and justify what's happened. So this to him is, I'm playing for the base. I'm going to dig even deeper into that base, and I'm going to hope and pray that the base participates from a voter participation level at a higher number than they did in 2016. That's my only hope here for the presidency. I'm not going to win over the independents or the suburban housewives at this moment.
So like the fact that he canceled, he wouldn't do a virtual debate. This is all calculated on his part.
I think so, yes. Yeah.
Well, I have to thank you again for this extended conversation at this time. It's always great to hear from you and such insight. I really appreciate it.
Anthony, well, it's a pleasure to be on. Best of luck with what you're doing. Hopefully you'll invite me back afterwards. We can have a recap. If I'm wrong, you can have your listeners throw eggs and tomatoes at me. I can get dunked in the water. But if I'm right, maybe we can talk about the future of the Republican Party and where it needs to go to make America more competitive and to have a strong, healthy two-party system going forward.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, be well. Thank you, Jerry. Best of luck.
Thanks. Feel free to send your comments on Twitter at Jerry Barmash or on our Facebook page, Here Now the News with Jerry Barmash. You can also leave a voice message, first name only, please, and location, from the Anchor app or website. I may read or play some comments in future episodes. If you like what you hear, please ask your friends to subscribe as well. You can also consider being part of the podcast growth by making a much appreciated listener donation. Next week, the coronavirus takes center stage, specifically the problem with parts of New York City not following social distancing, as cases are seeing a jump and
Governor Andrew Cuomo threatens to hold back school funding. I'll talk to Dov Hyken, an institution in the Orthodox Jewish Brooklyn neighborhood that saw protests and violence in response to the state's pushing back of reopening efforts. Thank you again for listening to Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barmash.